This is Regionally Speaking on Lakeshore Public Radio. I'm Chris Nolte. Lake County Elections and Voter Registration Executive Director Michelle Fehman says by the 2022 elections, they could have an electronic system in place that tracks election equipment, sets up payroll and training for poll workers, and creates maps of polling locations. She tells us more about a company that is basically focused on asset management.
The company's called Connect, and their product is called Poll Chief. And what it will do is it's an asset management as well as poll worker recruitment database. And so what we'll be able to do with it, there's multiple parts to it. So first we'll talk about like the poll workers. So in this past election, the 2020, we didn't have any place for poll workers to sign up. There was various companies out there that were advertising it, people would sign up, and then they would send us emails and say, these individuals are interested in working. And in this case, we would have our own way for people to apply online. They could give us their information and say, I'd like to work the polls, and tell us if they're Democrat or Republican. And so we'd have a stream constantly of going of people that were interested in working. So that way, of course, all of our polls would be filled. Now, beyond that, it will also be a way for us to do like online training. With COVID coming, it forced us to do a lot of our training via videos and so forth. Mm-hmm. And the poll workers would watch them. Because of COVID, things were kind of just thrown together, and we didn't really have a way to manage if people were actually attending the training sessions and so forth. So we paid them all for it. This would be a way for us to email the poll worker saying, here's your link. They would sign in. They would take it. We'd be able to do payroll afterwards, showing that they actually attended, get some feedback that way. We'll be able to email the poll workers. We'd be able to send them texts. We'd be able to do all sorts of stuff in regards to recruitment. And then, of course, and then afterwards, payroll of it, too. Mm-hmm. Another aspect of it is assets management. So every polling place, of course, gets their iPads, they get their voting machines, but then there's also the ADA requirements for the Americans with Disability Act that requires us to have handicapped parking, sometimes little cones for parking, sometimes it's door handles and so forth. With this, we'll be able to barcode each of those pieces of equipment. We'd be able to give like an iPad and a bar scanner. So that way, as the movers come to pick this stuff up, they'll be able to scan in what we've given them. As they deliver it, they'd be able to scan it, show it's been delivered. They would, whoever we give it for possession to, would be able to sign off saying we've received it. So it's gonna take a lot of the paperwork away. And we'd be able to see stuff real time, that it's been delivered and so forth. And when it comes to the ADA, it wouldn't be specifically for that polling place. It'd be just that they get two parking cones or mm-hmm. whatever the case may be. And so when that equipment comes back, what's also you're making sure that everything comes back and you're not losing any equipment per se, because some of them are ramps and so forth. So that's great on the delivery portion of it. Also, when the stuff comes back, we'd be able to scan it in, again, making sure we have everything back. Now, beyond that, currently what we do is when the poll workers returned their equipment after election night, so the tally cards, the iPads, the hotspots, and all that kind of stuff. Right now, we're doing it all off of Excel. We have an Excel spreadsheet, and it says Cedar Creek 2 should have iPad number 1, voting machine tally cards number 2 and 3, and so forth. And we're just highlighting those off. Mm-hmm. This would be, again, more barcode. So as they come in, we'd be able to barcode it. We wouldn't have to search for that paperwork. We wouldn't have to manually highlight off the stuff. We wouldn't have to physically give them a piece of paper saying that you've returned it. Here's your signature. We'll be able to barcode all that in real time, showing who's been returned, who has not been returned. We'd get their signatures, again, for payroll, if you're returning your equipment, showing who did that. And if we were in a situation again like COVID, you could have that pretty much as drive-through, where we could have stations outside with an iPad, and as people pull up, scan it in if we needed to. We could also do it in person here. So that's going to be huge for us. Just again, and savings on the paper, the time. If you've ever been out here on election night, sometimes polls always close at 6 p.m. Sometimes people are waiting in line out here till 7:30 just to drop it off. With doing those bar scans, it would be so much faster. So we're really excited about that aspect of it too. And then there'll be some stuff online for polling places and so forth. So we're really excited about mm-hmm. what it can do. Now, if we like the product, The best thing about this is all being paid for off a grant. So during COVID, we received a large grant from a group called CTCL. And so this is 100% being paid for out of the grant. So this is not taxpayer dollars. It is 100% off the grant, which is great. And again, it helps us with the flow of election management. Now, if we like this system, later on they have another module, which would be a campaign finance module. And there's a possibility we may bring this in. But what was so exciting about this, when we first got the iPads a few years ago, when we went from the paper poll books and so forth, we had talked to that company, and I had come up with this idea of almost exactly what this company is doing. I'm like, oh my gosh, it'd be so great if we could just barcode this stuff and be able to manage this stuff. And the company that we were using for the iPads, you know, they were a newer company, and they were more interested in selling the equipment versus kind of maybe expanding it. And so where we found this at is Leanne and I went to a conference down in Florida, and we came across this. I'm like, this is exactly what we've been looking for. No one has to reinvent the wheel and create this. And we had had a couple companies that had come in here that were trying to do it, and all of them said, you know, this is a bit too much. And so here's a company that's already doing it, already in Allen County in Indiana. It's also in Marion County in Indiana. So there's a couple counties that are already using this. We just never knew they were using it until we went to the conference and found it. And so we were excited, you know, bells and whistles were going off in our head of how great this could be. So we're really excited about it.
Tell us about this company, Connect, where they're based, what other clients do they happen to have? You mentioned, in fact, mentioned here in Indiana, at least Allen County and Marion County, two of the other bigger counties in the state that have probably just as many election problems, at least as far as equipment's concerned and staffing and training is concerned. What do they obviously know their business about this type of problem.
They do. They're in a lot of large counties. They're in like Leon County, Florida. They're in Minneapolis, Minnesota, Travis County, Texas, Missouri, Michigan. They have done business with a lot of large states, California, Florida. So a lot of the bigger counties, you know, we're the second largest in Indiana, but they've dealt with counties that have, you know, millions of registered voters where we have 371,000. So they are a proven company. We've been talking with some of the other counties that they've been in. They really love them. They've been around for a little while.
When you first found out about them by doing your research and get to the point, then finally they made their presentation to the county election board, what was the election board's reaction to what the folks from Connect had to say about what they say they can do? And you've had a chance to, you say, you work in kind of a pilot project with them, I guess, so far on this. What seemed to have turned out so far?
Right now, we're still in, like, the conversion. So we're sending them over, like, who our poll workers are, where each of our polling places, inventory of all of our voting machines, so all the assets management of it, of what goes where. So right now, we're in the building phase of it. Shortly, we should start getting some like demos where we'll start to play around on it and do some of that stuff. And what's really great about them is they're unique to the county. So they have a platform, but they're really willing to work with you in regards to, they know every election is different. Every county is different. Everyone has different rules and regulations. So they're really about customization, which is great because it's not just, okay, here's this box of elections and let's throw you into it. They're willing to work with you. And a lot of their stuff, reports out of it are phenomenal. Pretty much whatever you're putting in there, you can pull out in any way, shape, or form. You can run history on it. You'll be able to tell which poll workers already worked elections. You might be able to find out, you know, who's bilingual. You'll be able to find out all sorts of information that you'll be able to pull out and put towards databases. So there's a lot of customization on it.
Is the opportunity to be able to work with them in the fact that they have at least two other big counties in Indiana already as clients, does that help in turn that when it's time to make your reports to the Indiana Department of Elections as to whether everything is going to be up to state law, up to state election standards?
Oh, absolutely, and especially like when, you know, all of our voting machines were purchased, a lot of them with federal funds and stuff like that. So there's times where they'll come back in and say, hey, where's this voting machine at and everything. Right. And so we've always kept really good track of everything. But having this, it's just an additional feature, another, you know, just a way to keep all your assets in line. So that's helpful. But what's really helpful is because they've done so many other counties and states and so forth, and again, a lot of them way bigger than us, we're able to get information from them and learn from them at the same time of how can we, you know, how is this county doing it and what, how are they using this feature, mm-hmm. you know, and how can we use it bigger, better, faster, you know, more efficient. What else can we learn from them? And that's what's great about going to some of these conferences. Again, when we go down to Indianapolis, we're the second largest, so people are looking at us as to how can we make our lives easier? What do you guys do? And when we go to these conferences, we're, again, dealing with Miami County and, you know, big counties in California and stuff. And, in fact, as we've gone to some of these things, that's how we kind of worked our garage area downstairs of color coding things and so forth. And so you can learn a lot from attending these larger conferences.
With Connect is helping make things easier and make the whole process smoother. Obviously, it's going to help out on either up to Election Day, but coming out of Election Day. Is there anything that they can help on, maybe beyond the process itself of keeping track of the equipment and the like and the people that are working at the polls? Is there anything that they can do to help make the election itself smoother? Or is it because they all fit together in what they're doing, it's just naturally going to help making election night a little easier?
I think overall, it's going to help make election night easier. It's going to make for planning easier. Again, staffing those polling places, staffing the early voting locations. You know, through time, we've seen our early voting locations grow by leaps and bounds of how many people are utilizing those facilities. And in the last election, you know, sometimes you would have people work 2 days and the crowds were really big mm-hmm. at those locations and would have people work 2 days and then they'd quit. So staffing-wise, the parts of this which is great is there's stuff that's going to help us before the election, during the election, and after the election. So we see a lot of benefit to going with this company and to moving in this direction. So we're really excited about it. And then again, hopefully if we like it all, then we'll add on another module to help with the campaign finance. And what that would help later on is for people filing for their financial reports, for the public being able to see those reports, for us to be able to, for the candidates to be able to put all their data in and have it come out on a report and so forth. So there's a lot of benefits that could possibly come, but it's one of those things. Let's try it, make sure they're as good as they say they are before we invest, you know, everything. Let's try it out. And so we're excited to get some of this into play now.
I spoke with the Elections and Voter Registration Executive Director Michelle Fehman in her office at the Lake County Government Center in Crown Point. This is Regionally Speaking on listener-supported Lakeshore Public Radio. After a year or so of being allowed to remain out of the pews because of the COVID-19 pandemic, Catholics all across Northwest Indiana will be welcomed back into church beginning on June 11th. And we have with us the person who knows best about the situation, some of the decisions that had to be made that brought us to this point coming up. We have with us the Diocese of Gary Bishop, the Most Reverend Robert McClory with us. And Bishop McClory, thank you for joining us on Lakeshore Public Radio.
Chris, it's great to be back with you. Of course, we spoke about a year and a half ago.
That's right.
I was getting ready to come. And so it's a joy to be with you to discuss some good news, some transitions in our faith life and our expression of it here in Northwest Indiana.
With, the decision that was made and the announcement that was made earlier this week about the fact that Catholics will be able to come back into church for in-person masses on starting June 11th, tell us more about the decision, the discussions. I'm sure there were quite a few discussions, I would imagine, probably all of them on Zoom or some other way of teleconferencing, to talk about the questions that may come up, the issues that may come up, but in turn led to the decision to allow for in-person worship again.
Well, thank you so much, Chris. Yes, you know, central to our life as Christians, one of the commandments and in the Judeo-Christian and other heritage is to keep holy the Lord's Day. So throughout this time of pandemic, you know, that has still remained clear. The question has been, does one need to come to Mass during this time to fulfill what we would say is that obligation, because that's how we understand it, is that, you know, you come to Mass and you experience it as a community. So, you know, really going back to March of last year, there was a period that our churches effectively were closed to public worship. You could still come in for some private times of prayer. But about a year ago, we did reopen, but there were certainly many people who, because of their own individual health condition, stayed home. And we also thought that because the pandemic was affecting so many people, that we would extend what's called a dispensation, which is a fancy way of saying, you know, you got to keep Holy the Lord's Day, but you don't need to come to Mass to do yeah. that. So over the course of the last year, we have really learned. We've had certain protocols in place. And so we have seen a gradual return. But now with the progress in the pandemic, some of the revisions to the public health guidelines, and with consultation with the laity, it's a more full-throated invitation to say, of course, there might be exempting causes, particular situations and health needs that you still need to attend to. So if that's you, it's not like we want to make you feel guilty that you're supposed to be in church when you have a health situation. That's yeah. not the case.
Would you take a moment and tell us in more specifics about the health conditions and the other conditions that will allow parishioners that if they choose or if they can't for whatever serious reason to be able to go to Mass basically and do it in person?
Yeah. So certainly, if you're seriously ill or you have flu-like symptoms or you think you may have a contagious disease, you know, we would by all means say, you know, if you need to quarantine, you need to stay home, don't come to church. Or if you feel that you're unwell, we don't want to put you at risk or somebody else at risk. And also, you know, there are always some people who, through no fault of their own, are not able to make it. You know, they may not have transportation. It's also true that some of our parishes are still navigating, accommodating all the folks with some form of social distancing. And so, you know, you need to make sure that you have that accessible to you. But also, you know, we have certain folks who are homebound or they're really incapacitated due to age or infirmity or other medical restrictions. And so we don't want you to go return if you're in that situation. And also, you know, while the vaccine has been widely available, not everybody is able to be vaccinated. I'm fully vaccinated, for which I'm grateful. But if you're not vaccinated, you're in a risk category, you know, then that certainly would be an understandable situation. So, and we also we know that there are some caretakers of those who are infirm. And so if you're home taking care of a loved one or someone who you're responsible for, you know, we would allow that to extend to them as well. So we're trying to be prudent and charitable about all this. And so those would be some of the factors that would continue mm-hmm. to say, hey, you need to stay home. That's okay.
Bishop McGlory, will you take a minute and talk about what's happened in the past year or so, the impact that the pandemic and certainly the decisions that had to lead to basically that people had to stay out of the churches would have on not only people, the parishioners, but the parishes and the priests in the parishes? What have they talked about and the impact that's had on them?
Yeah, certainly. I think, as with the rest of society, it was a sudden change for all of us. And what we've really tried to sustain throughout this and looking to the future is to still reach out to those who are not able to come into the churches for whatever reason. So we've really invested many of our parishes in, you know, some simple things like phone trees or increasing social media presence or even doing much more live streaming. And we have, you know, we did see, you know, gradual return to more and more people coming back. But then, you know, when the spike seemed to really hit again, let's say in November, December, you know, right when we're getting ready for Christmas, it seemed like the trends are working a bit against us. So we really tried to be intentional at Christmas time to let folks know that they're still part of the family, even if they can't make it to church or they need to stay home for a variety of reasons. But we tried to be very responsible with sanitizing stations and social distancing. With masking, and we're modifying some of this now as the CDC modifies. But it has been a loss. You know, we're the family of faith, and we use that verbiage a lot. And so it's kind of felt like the whole family's not been together, you know, in person.
No.
And so it'll be really a beautiful time for us to have more of the family come together.
Was it really difficult in the past 8 months here around Christmas and particularly all of the observances that center around Easter for parishioners to be able to feel comfortable and still be able to practice their faith?
Yeah, I think, again, we tried to reach out, and we certainly had, the majority of of our parishioners were able to at least come back. But because of the time of pandemic, you know, and which we're, I don't want to say we're out of it yet, it was a little bit challenging for some of them. So we tried to provide some in-home resources as well for those who are not able to make it to Mass, you know, some prayer services that you could do with you and your family, a way to kind of make sure that you're connected during that time. And, you know, really, Chris, has been for us a season always of prayer. But I think we also want to pray and have a conversation about, you know, what we've lost, what we've gained, what we should do now, what we should do in the future. And certainly, you know, we could just kind of turn the page and say, well, the pandemic is starting to recede, so on we go. But it's a good time for us to reflect and say, you know, are there some things that we've embraced during this time that make sense for us to continue because we've learned some lessons? Are there other things that maybe we thought were so important that we were spending a lot of time doing in the past that now we need to reconsider that? So really encouraging the parishes to reflect individually on that. And then also, candidly, and thank you for having me on the air, a time of invitation, you know, really saying, hey, you know, come on back. You know, we're here to keep you safe and healthy and to make sure that you have all the spiritual resources you need from the Catholic Church.
Well, I'm sure that the faithful want to hear from the bishop. They want to hear it in his words, and that was the reason, one of the reasons, of course, we wanted you to come on the program to talk. What does the future look like, in this your estimation, for the Diocese of Gary, as everyone is dealing with the pandemic and as things are starting to lessen in intensity?
Well, I think what we're experiencing, and this is obviously true in the Church as well, you know, is, I would say, a greater return to normalcy. Now, what will that look like as we go into the future? I think, you know, for some people, and I'm not a psychologist, but, you know, there is a kind of a collective PTSD, you know, for some, a kind of a post-traumatic stress syndrome where we're still absorbing the last year. I think we've been able to joyfully look to the future. What we're doing really in Northwest Indiana here during this time is I've asked us to continue a season of prayer for hope and healing, because I think that's really what we need. We need hope, and I see signs of that increasing, and also healing, and healing not just because we're still absorbing the physical effects of COVID, but we've had a pretty tumultuous year from social disharmony and racial tensions and a greater sense of needing to address some injustices in the world and, you know, certainly a climate of divisiveness. And so we really need to pray for healing in our families, healing in our community, and also for hope. So I do look to the future with hope. I certainly see signs that people are embracing an additional kind of return to some practices, including their faith practices, that maybe they've gotten away from over the last year.
Well, Bishop McClory, thank you very much for spending time with us. And if you've mentioned a lot in our conversation so far, but if there's anything else that you feel that you want to add to at least reassure more people, and I guess we're doing I guess in a way it's a rather religious pep talk, isn't it, to be able to welcome everybody back that has missed being in church for Mass, to be sure. You think that they're ready? Do you think that they are the residents of Northwest Indiana who are faithful Catholics are ready to return?
I think so. I'll tell you, you know, a concrete example that we had really good outdoor turnout, you know, because outdoor events have been a little bit more open, obviously. But, you know, when I led what are called the Stations of the Cross at the Shrine of Christ's Passion on Good Friday, and that was an outdoor event. And so people felt very comfortable coming. Everybody, you know, was respected the different protocols. But, you know, to see the desire that people had, certainly in that setting, to come together and to pray, shows me that there is a pent-up desire to return. I would encourage, you know, call your local parish to see what specifically they're doing. As we transition back, you know, each parish is making sure that they have the specific protocols to meet their own needs, but we want to keep you safe and make sure that you feel comfortable as you return. So, you know, calling your local parishes would certainly be good. I would say, Chris, you know, one of the things that I think we need to reflect on is kind of a delayed grieving. You know, a lot of funerals that were not held with the same, public rites of worship and mourning and coming together to grieve. So I think we we need to reflect a bit on how we can respond to those needs. I'm going to be at a funeral this summer that's really been almost delayed by about a full year.
Wow.
Because of family concerns. And so, you know, some of those things that we really yearn for in our hearts to be able to come together around those moments, I think we'll need to listen and we'll need to respond. And we're certainly here to do that as the Catholic Church in Northwest Indiana.
Well, Bishop McGlory, thank you very much for spending time with us to talk about the changes that will take effect here with the Catholic churches in Northwest Indiana beginning on June 11th. And our best to everybody, certainly at the parishes and the parishioners that will be coming back. And we know it's going to be a joyous time. Maybe less so for some people, but for most, I'm sure it will be. And thank you for spending time with us to talk about it.
Amen. Thank you so much, Chris.
You're welcome. We've been speaking with the Most Reverend Robert McGlory. He is the Bishop of the Diocese of Gary. This is Regionally Speaking on Lakeshore Public Radio. I'm Chris Nolte. Two young local entrepreneurs in the Indianapolis area are making a big leap. They're going from running a small convenience store to operating and owning a full-size grocery. It's set to open next year as a way to help residents in a food desert. And as Sidesfect Public Media's Farah Yousri tells us, it's also part of an unusual collaboration with a Hoosier-based medical device company.
I think we got a couple more bags in the back.
On a sunny day, Michael McFarland and Marcus Williams are at the parking lot of a strip mall on 38th Street in Indianapolis. They're packing up bags of chips, canned vegetables, and diapers to deliver to a local homeless shelter.
Any more back there, Mike?
The two guys are in their 30s and have been friends for as long as they can remember.
We grew up together in the same neighborhood, used to go to school together, ride bikes, fix up cars, you know, just everyday friends.
That's Williams. Living on the northeast side of Indianapolis, he's seen how the area changed over time. Many grocery stores have shut down in recent years, leaving thousands of residents struggling. And that's a big problem, because a lack of fruits, vegetables, and other fresh food can contribute to ailments like obesity and diabetes.
Three aisles right here, which have canned goods.
So a few years ago, the two friends decided to start a convenience store to try and tackle the issue of food access.
Cakes, you got the sodas. In the back of the store was the fruits and vegetables, you know, tomatoes, potatoes.
But things were not easy at Wall Street Grocery. They ran on small profit margins, and they faced distributor and supply chain roadblocks. They could only get fruits on certain days, vegetables on others. It was hard to predict. Williams says it's more than just a job. It's a lifestyle.
You have to check the food every day, two or three times a day, turn it, spray it, flip it, check the dates. You got to stay on top of your distributors.
Now they're shutting down their convenience store, but they're not abandoning their neighborhood. In fact, they are the future owners of a 15,000-square-foot grocery store being built less than a mile away. Near the Arlington Woods neighborhood, workers are preparing a construction site. A family-owned Bloomington-based company is building a plant to make needles, catheters, and other medical devices used in hospitals all over the world. It's also spending $2.5 million to build a grocery store, Indy Fresh Market. Local organizations like Impact Central Indiana are pitching in with capital and inventory, too.
It was never part of our business plan to have a grocery store.
That's Pete Youngman, president of Cook Medical, a multi-billion-dollar medical device company. He says talking to community members, it was clear that food access was an issue. And things came full circle when he met McFarland and Williams. Once the construction of Indy Fresh Market is complete, it will be turned over to McFarland and Williams through a rent-to-own model. Youngman says having a local grocery store owned by young members from the community and not another big box chain makes it easier to cater to the residents' specific needs.
So they're committed to making space in the grocery store so that local growers that they know can bring their produce in the grocery store. They can do education programs to teach people about foods they may have never seen before. So we're partnering right now trying to figure out a way to ensure that if people are prescribe food as medicine, they can get that paid for at the grocery store.
Such efforts are much needed, according to Niyati Perik, a global public health professor at New York University. She says if the store can get residents to spend their hard-earned dollars mindfully, it can be a win-win.
It could be a grocery store could give incentives, right? The more fruits and vegetables you buy, the more free points you get to go and buy more. There could be very creative ways.
As McFarland and Williams empty their convenience store and give away the remaining food stock, they know a lot is riding on their plans. To help their community move forward, they have to make sure residents reap the benefits of the new, bigger store. For Side Effects Public Media, I'm Farah Yusri.
A Valparaiso boy has been rewarded with $500 for reporting poaching in Porter County. Indiana Department of Natural Resources says Bridger Strickland was presented with the check last week. The DNR says that because of Strickland's report to them, an investigation is underway leading to the identity of the suspect and charges are likely to be filed. The Turn-in-a-Poacher program, as it's called, protects fish and wildlife resources through public support and involvement in bringing violators to justice. A poacher, by the way, is defined by the Indiana Department of Natural Resources as a thief who illegally steals wildlife that belongs to every Indiana resident. That's it for Regionally Speaking for today. I'm Chris Nolte, and thank you very much for being with us, and we'll be back with you tomorrow.